this stuff we got.
It's overrated.
Well, you're here. I've learned a lot.
All right, we'll get started here. Welcome to everybody. If we will, just take a moment of silence. We'll do the Serenity Prayer and then we'll get started with the workshop. God.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
So my name is Dan. I am a cocaine addict.
Amen.
And welcome to the workshop. Today we have Carol Ann, Hugh, Russ, and Art. For those of you who don't know them, they're going to talk a little bit about their history with our fellowship and how it started and the changes that they've seen over the years. And then what we'll do is we'll have each of them talk for maybe 10 minutes, maybe a little less, and then we're going to open it up for questions. So we hope that that kind of elicits diving a little farther into our history doing it that way. I love Cocaine Anonymous. I am currently the archivist. I hold all of what you see behind us, and I take great pride in doing all of that. Eric Clark asked me a few years back if I would take it from him, and I was honored with that, and I've been doing it since. So Cocaine Anonymous is, like I said, near and dear to my heart, and 41 years ago, right now, today, I was being taken from my mother. She came and got me out of an empty apartment. I was completely delusional, and she took me to Porter Hospital, where I spent a week at Porter Hospital in a cocaine psychosis. Little did I know that at that exact moment, the fellowship that 31 years later would save my life was being formed in California. And shortly thereafter, a fellowship started here in Colorado. They didn't know about the one in California, and then another one popped up in Chicago. But this fellowship is what saved my life. And the people who came before me saved my life. And so we're going to hear a little bit today about those who came before us, those who started this fellowship, especially here in Colorado, and then those who kept it going for all of those years. So without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to Carol Ann down there on the other end.
Thank you. Passing the baton. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Dan. My name is Carol Ann, and I am an addict. And 41 years ago today, the first meeting was in California, and I believe it was at the Screen Actors Guild, north of Los Angeles, at their retirement home. And there were a lot of people that needed this, and someone suggested it. My last day and was 1 year and 10 days after that, or November 28th, 1983. They were November 18th, 1982. And I didn't even realize that till today. I had thought that my ex-husband had a problem. Wasn't mine. And so I had decided I needed to go to Al-Anon. So I started out in Al-Anon, and I was given a book called Getting Them Sober, and I clutched it to my chest and walked around with it. The guy never got sober. He died earlier this year, and we were the best of friends at the end, and things were very different than in those days. So Al-Anon didn't do it, but I got an Al-Anon sponsor. So I moved on and thought AA was going to be my answer. So I ended up with all these old cigar-chomping guys, and I couldn't describe my problem because I couldn't take what my situation was and turn it into alcohol, because it wasn't alcohol. Very frustrating. So I met this man at an Al-Anon meeting, and he moved in 2 weeks later, and he brought his four kids, and I had four kids, and I lived in the world of chaos, and I wanted to quit using. So basically what I did was, it was Thanksgiving, and he was at the house with his kids, I was at the house with my kids. My mother was there. There was a frozen turkey, and I decided to go to Las Vegas and let them all do whatever they were going to do. I went to Las Vegas. I have a cousin who's a musician, and I figured whatever was in the green room that night was going to be good. And he was playing at the Tropicana. Anyway, I left them all with a frozen turkey, 10 of them. And I got to Las Vegas, and I was horrified to think of what I had done, and I had to go back and face them all. And I didn't get high. It ended with a whimper and not with a bang. And I came back to Denver and realized, and my stomach still hurts thinking about it. I was done. Without going into the details, that man later went to prison for 18 years for molesting my children, and my life was pretty unpleasant. So I heard that there was a meeting. They took what they called was a wet one to Mercy Hospital, and they said there was a meeting in the green room there. So I went over and went to the meeting at the green room, and it went on for a couple weeks, and they kicked us out. We found there was a space. It was myself and a couple other people. That there was a space at Wilscombe's restaurant on Arapahoe Street, so we went there on a Saturday morning. The vacuum cleaners went underneath our feet, and we lifted our legs and sat in a booth, and Wilscombe's restaurant closed. I don't know how long it was. I don't have much memory.
It was like late 93, or 83.
Okay, so we had only been there a few weeks when the restaurant closed and we had no place to go. So this guy said that he was at the Nirvana Counseling Center and with Donna Roberts, who ran the Nirvana Counseling Center, and that we could go over there and that she would give us a room on Saturday morning, which was the first meeting became meeting number one at Nirvana. And we met there for a while, and then people came and people went. I had no idea of how to run a meeting, and it just went until it dragged on until from 10 o'clock or 10:30 until afternoon, and then we all just got up and left. And eventually got a bit more organized. We moved to the second room. 2 years later, back to November of 85, and this guy named Don Y showed up. He, in all my wisdom, I thought, this guy is cross-eyed, he stutters, he'll never make it. Don was the standard by which this fellowship works until last year, Christmas? 21. I don't keep track of time these days. Okay, Hugh says December 5th. 21, and we began to get organized then. He stayed, and then a couple other people stayed, and we moved downstairs to a room where there's people in here that might remember the smoking. The smoke was so thick in the basement, and that's Michael. And Michael and Sam should be up here, and a couple other people too. Because this is not just our history, it's your history and everyone else's history here. But the smoke was so thick, I don't know how we even breathed, but we did. And I'll just stop there and hand it over. We began to organize and put together something. Oh, just one more thing. What do you call it? The barbecue in the summer with
the delegate
social. God, thank you. The first one, Don organized it, and it was a car wash with a hibachi and a couple people in bikinis. And that was how we raised money for to send the first delegate to California. And with that, I'll pass the baton.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you.
Well done. I look out here and I see erstwhile erratic, beautiful people. Excuse me. My name is Hugh. That would probably help you.
Thank you.
Hi, guys. I love that. I did not come in of my own volition. I had a person say, "You are so messed up, you better get someplace and get some help right now." At the point that I, my last days of using, I was living in essentially in a basement of a house most of the time. I had aluminum foil in the window so they couldn't see in. It took several months for me to realize that the window was opaque and they could not have seen in anyway. I had a black and white TV that didn't work, and I turned it on and it made static, and that was my conversation. Then I turned it off, and then I talked to two spiders that were on the wall. What we have here today, too, is a challenge. You have four geriatrics who are losing their memory. So we'll give you a thumbnail print of what happened in CA. So Russ and I got here 2 days apart. My sobriety birthday, June 5th of 1989. And you can do the math. Russ came shortly thereafter. And I've always told them that I have superior spiritual grasp. We have become good friends. So there were, you know, half a dozen meetings. We didn't have many people. But the class of 89 was notorious because a bunch of people came in. And we told people that the reason for that great influx was there was some really good cocaine out on the street. And, you know, all kidding aside, though, I was really a mess. The guy who came to me with his concern was a guy named Roland. And he managed to get me set up at West Pines. I was there on a 30-day visit, and they kept me there for 45 days. They didn't think I was ready to go at 30. And I owe that to a Dr. Ritvo, who is still working someplace in town. Last I heard, he was over at the CU Medical Center. And so, men of medicine, we trust. And, you know, he was one of those, and he was instrumental in my health. When I went to West Pines, I was absolutely paranoid. And when I ended up there, I was afraid that they were going to move me someplace, a psychiatric hospital, basically. So I stayed awake all night waiting for them to come in. There was a nurse who did the rounds. And when she came in, I jumped up and grabbed her, put my arms around her, and said, "You're not taking me." And I was informed that that is not standard procedure. So they kept me there anyway. So like I said, it was 45 days. During that process, they would take us to meetings. So I went to Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, and Cocaine Anonymous. At that time, I thought it was just three different factions of the greater group. I suppose in a sense, because we're all focused on God as our objective so that we can be more effective to other people, is what we came into. We were a small group. We did book studies in those days, a la Don P. And what that meant was that we would get a group of people together and go through the book. We still do that today. My friend over here, I won't mention his name, we have a meeting at his house every so often, every couple of weeks on the average. There are several people in this room who are in that meeting, and it's a great process. But the collaboration of people's experience help us to find what our problem is and also what the solution is. So back to the past, we had, I've forgotten how many meetings, but it wasn't very many. And as a result of the desire by many of us who didn't know jack shit about what was going on, we started to do our meetings, the meetings after the meeting, it's we would call it, you know, and we'd talk about what recovery is. And Don Y was the guy who was the high profile then, so he helped us organize those meetings. And we slowly gained more people. There were very few people left from the class of 89, and some have moved on, some have died, and some went to different fellowships. It's actually something that if you're fairly new, that you may experience too. You may be one of any one of those three groups. I have a number of people who I sponsored who are doing well in life. I have a couple who went back out and started drinking, and they're okay with it. So that's none of my business. And unfortunately, two died as a result of, not listening to suggestion. Each of those two guys carried a resentment to their death. And they were fear-laden, and that was one of the things we learned in the fellowship, is that some live, some die, some prosper. And those people who prosper and dedicated to Cocaine Anonymous, there's still a few of us around. But it's and you guys are also our teachers. I'm a firm believer that, you know, God has no sense of time, so he just waits for us to show up, you know, and we do as a result of the steps. So initially we started using the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous with their permission, and we started to grow. And we added more meetings. We had a lot more people for a while. And what happened then is that we realized we didn't know much about the structure. For Don P. from AA came over and took us on a trip through the traditions and the concepts. And it changed CA forever. That man we owe a great salute to. He was vilified by several people in Alcoholics Anonymous, but he was absolutely an incredible man as far as giving his time to us. And the reason he did this, he explained once, was in AA, if a person comes in and they do not have alcohol in their experience, then in a closed meeting, they were asked to leave. But Don thought, we need to have a place where they can go and get clean and sober. So he came to us and tutored us on these processes. But his model, his example was exemplary. It was not about being very rigid. It was on the contrary. It was about finding the happy and joyful place in our hearts that made us more effective as people who would go out and help other people. And so that's what we have become. We are messengers. I happen to believe that the 11th step is probably the most, it encompasses all the previous steps in some way or another. And I have noticed over the years that people who do their 11th step rigorously and the 10th step, they have a far better chance of staying clean and sober. And I say this not as for history, but as a matter of fact. And it's a great honor to sit up here today. I absolutely love working with other people. I came up out of a basement, an isolator. And when I came in, I was so nervous being around people. I started drinking coffee. And when I did, I was so nervous I would shake. And they would make fun of me at 1740 Williams, which is one of the places we were at. And there would be a circle of coffee stain around me. But I enjoyed the entertainment, I suppose. And slowly I became more lucid and aware of what was going on. We have a pretty decent fellowship here now. If we can give you as much as we remember the path to quality recovery, then we'll do it. We're more than happy to share our experience and our strength and always our hope. This is an evening up process. What happened with me and Don, he was my sponsor. We went through the steps several times, and one day he said, or I did, I don't remember which now, neither one of us is worth a damn. We don't know shit about being friends. So let's make a deal, and we're going to teach each other how to be friends. And that's how it started. We went to different places to carry the message together. And it was truly remarkable. He was a traveling salesman, and I would go with him to different places, and we would talk about recovery. And Don P. was my Don Y to a lot of you guys. He was our font. He was our source. I typically don't mention people, but this is a person who trained us. So we are the downline, several generations down, of that guy who came to us one day and said, "I'll help you," and he did. A few people in this room had the pleasure of knowing him. But more importantly, we found that after that, we were more cohesive, we were more coherent, and we were more armed with facts. A lot of it started making it through the steps with facts, and were able to help other people based on our experience. You know, in the Big Book, it tells us that we share our experience. We're not here to save people, we're here to share our experience. And if you want it, you're welcome to it. And if not, you're welcome to not having it. And that's just a brief profile. So I'm gonna hand this over to Russ. This is my friend, Russ.
Thanks, you. Thank you.
Thank you. Russ, cocaine addict? Well, we've run out of time. also an alcoholic for you sensitive alcoholics. Don't have to drink or use, even if you want to. That is not my message that I came up with. 1997, I got divorced, and I went through, I don't think I was emotionally sober, 97, 98, and I went to a promises meeting in Denver we used to have at the church, 18th and Broadway, and I came back, and there was a bunch of newcomers there complaining about broken fingernails and having to take drug tests to keep their jobs and stuff like that, and it just, I was so irritated. Everything irritated me. So I ended up going to Don's house, and Don said, you don't look too good. Anybody that knew Don had this right eyebrow that went up like a triangle. And so when Don wanted to get your attention, his eyebrow went up. And he would look at you, and he said, what's wrong with you? And I said, I went to this meeting, and these newcomers are complaining about everything. And they have to take drug tests, and they have to call their probation officer and stuff like that. And he said, so what do you think? I said, well, you know, just don't drink or use. So the message came out of a resentment. And so it seems like a lot of work that I end up having to do is through fear and resentment. So early days, I went to treatment in 1989 at Mercy Medical, where we had one of our first meetings. I ended up there as a result of an attempted suicide. The thought of doing cocaine, especially crack, the rest of my life scared me. The thought of not doing it scared me. Back in the 80s, crack was just an epidemic. And I was telling somebody earlier that, you know, we learned how to cook it in our microwave. I mean, pretty scary. So I would go to King Soopers and I would get all the ingredients and I'd go home and I'd cook it up. And thank God they didn't have the internet back then or I'd have never left my home. And you know, back then if you wanted to do pornography, you actually had to go into a back of a video store. You don't have to do that now. So anyway, we had a meeting at Porter Hospital that was at Thursday night and Saturday night. And so the two big meetings now are Whiteout and Nirvana. But back in the day, we would get 85, 95 people on a Thursday night Porter meeting. And there were a limited amount of chairs, and then we'd all sit in the middle and we'd smoke cigarettes. And we'd spill coffee. It's one thing to not drink and use anymore. It's another thing to work on being honest and being not so selfish. And we didn't care. And so we all smoked. We didn't care about the people that didn't smoke, and we spilled coffee all over. And so what happened after a while, just like the individual, if you don't apply to these principles we have, you're in trouble. So they kicked us out of Porter Hospital. I also found out that we would always say that there was a Porter Hospital meeting. That's what we call the Cocaine Anonymous. Well, what happened in the 90s is we got a bunch of, I have to word this properly, traditions police that came in and said, well, you can't do that because you're affiliating with Porter Hospital. So we changed all the names of the meetings to make people happy. And so in the very early days, we had the very first meeting list I got in 89 had 8 meetings. And we went to meetings all the time. There were 40, 45 of us. So what I like to talk about is we had about 45 50 people that were part of the fellowship, and then we had 150 tourists. So we have tourists now. They come into meetings, they sit in the back, they never talk, they get a bunch of information, and then they go out and try to apply it. And what happens is they never come up to the front row. And so what's happened over the years is we've had people that, and it's that 5-year period, Alcoholics Anonymous has this 5-year myth where if something doesn't change by 5 years, you're probably in trouble. I got married to a younger woman when I was 5 years clean. And I got divorced when I was 8 years clean. And I was more scared in my 8th year than I was in my first day. Because I knew what I needed to do. I did everything but not smoke crack and drink. But the behavior was bad. I did pornography. I said the F-bomb at every meeting I went to. I objectified women from the age of, I don't know what's the legal age, 17 and up. And I just didn't care. And then what happened was we were doing book studies. And we'd do book studies and tradition studies, and we'd end up at Don's house or Don P's house. And what happens, this is my experience, if you do these book studies and you go through the big book and you pray every morning and you pray every night and you put yourself in a position every day for God to work, there's only two things that can happen. You're either going to go towards the resistance, which is to sit in God's lap, or you know what else? You're going to go out and you're going to smoke some cocaine. And so... God, I can't remember what I had for lunch last week, but I can remember April 12, 2002, I had to put my dog down. And Indy was a dog that I got in my second year of sobriety up in Evergreen. And he was a black lab, and when he was 12 years old, his back leg went out. And I'd put a dog down in 96. Hugh and Don went with me, but I just... didn't want to put Indy down, so we spent $4,000 to have his back leg built, rebuilt. And when I had to put him down, the guilt that filled me up was unbelievable. I went to a meeting every single day for my first 8 years. I sponsored some people. I went through the big book with Don. But on that day, I drove to go get two bottles of white Zinfandel at a liquor store on the corner of Jewel and Kipling. And I got in the wrong lane. I got in the left lane. And people say that's just a coincidence. I don't think so. Because I meant to drink that day. And I got home and Jan and I cried and I called Don, and the first thing Don would do, you know, Don had this knack when I would call him about something going on, the first thing he would say is, I understand. That's why I'm in this fellowship. Because I can talk about this stuff. I can talk about crying, putting dogs down. I can talk about getting diagnosed with cancer 9 years ago. I can get diagnosed with my wife having a horrible disease she doesn't even know she has. And you people understand. And I cried myself to sleep. I called Don in the morning, and he asked me, how you doing? And I said, I didn't drink. And you know what Don said? He said, there you go. And so this is what this is about. This is about not drinking and not using every hour of every day. But my experience is, and Don told me this up until the day he died, in order to enlarge your spirit, you have to go towards the resistance. So the resistance is doing stuff that you don't want to do. And it's hard, but I mean, the good news is that there's people in this room that have experience. So if you're new in this room and you think we're full of crap because we're all old, Henry Ford said something that was pretty important. One of the greatest assets you can have is experience. Nothing replaces experience. And so we were just so young in the beginning, you know, if it hadn't been for Don Pritz, I don't know. He told us how to organize an area meeting, how to do a district meeting. And our lineage that we talk about in here is, Pritz never told people what to do. He just asked you questions. Because what I found out is the God of my understanding is a spiritual experience. So he wants me to have my own, and you can't have mine. And so what you have to do, and I talk about this a lot, is you're going to have to go over some pretty big bumps in the road. And you're going to lose parents and kids and jobs and whatever, limbs. Something's going to happen to you. And I'm here to tell you that you don't have to drink or use. It's always an option for me, but today I don't choose it. So if you're in this room and you're struggling, and if you don't have a sponsor and you're sponsoring yourself, you're being sponsored by a fool. And there's a lot of sobriety. When I first got here, there were hardly any women. And now you've got women with solid, not only time, but they have work in the steps. It's about humility and going towards the resistance. And so later on, we'll have some questions and answers to see if we can get you in the right place.
Good afternoon, y'all. My name's Art. And I'm a cocaine addict.
Do I need this?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
No.
No? Okay.
Let's rock.
What I have is some experience that's direct and some of it that is relayed to me. And I'd like to tell at least three vignettes. And so I'm going to kind of run through these. I guarantee you I qualify to be here. I arrived here in 1993, and I was psychotic, and I was suicidal. I heard voices followed me everywhere. They were in the walls in my car, and I was trying to kill myself. So I knew I had to have another way to live. And through whatever energies and forces, I wound up on the hotline in March of 1993. And the guy that answered the phone was a guy named Alan Abelman. And he was on the hotline, and he'd been a lawyer. And I was a lawyer, and I was hurting really bad. I'd been crying for days. And he told me where to go. So the first meeting I went to was Dragon's Den. And that's where my journey started. And it was the day after the first state convention in Colorado, which was 1993. And that ended on, I don't know, March whatever, and I came in on Monday. That same guy, I kept calling back the hotline. Every time I called the hotline, he answered. And he told me where I would get my first sponsor. And I said, where's that? And he said, meeting number one. He said, go there. You'll see a guy named Don. Ask him. He'll be your sponsor. I went there. He was there. And Don was there. So I walked up to Don. And I was 3 or 4 days sober. And I asked him. He just looked at me and went, oh, God. But he said yes. And I got home, got a book on the way home, got it, and I called him. When I started working the steps, I met the people, Mike and, you know, the old-timers that are in here. And they worked this thing the same way. When I sat down and talked to Don about where this came from, this is one of the stories he gave me, and they've mentioned Don Pritz. Don Pritz was a trustee of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in 1993, that's a big deal. And for him to split, or not split, but him to turn his attention to these erratic, erstwhile cocaine addicts was a big divergence. And Don Young, my sponsor, had been circling. And he wanted to ask Don to sponsor him, but he didn't have enough nerve. Finally, he got it up, and he went up to Don Pritz, and he said, would you be my service sponsor? And Don P. looked at him, and he said, yeah, Don, I'll take some time, and I'll do that. Well, they did this dance for a while, and it just evolved into Don Pritz sponsoring Don Y. And as Don Young presented this to me, a few years down the road, Don Pritz told Don Young, the reason that I sponsored you was because you people needed good sponsorship. And I looked at you and I believed that you would carry the message, the black on the white, in the first 164 pages, and you wouldn't change it. And that's what Don Young did. Don Young didn't tinker with this. I tinker with it, but Don Young never tinkered with it. And that's what it took for us to get this the way it is now. Don Pritz told him, in addition to that, he said, and when I sponsor you and give you this good sponsorship, you're going to sponsor other people and stay the fuck out of our rooms. Because AA looked at us as a challenge to their message. They wanted singleness of purpose. And we're all over the place. Don went to the first world conference in L.A. I believe it was in 85. And Cocaine Anonymous was looking for a definition. How were we going to move forward? And so they decided it was going to be cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. So they had a floor fight at the conference over whether caffeine and sugar were going to be included. And this went on for 2 days. And Don reported to me, he says, I was nuts. And I'm standing on the floor going, we're dead. This isn't going to go anywhere. We can't even agree on the shape of a table, much less, you know. But finally they did. And that's what we have in our formats and in Cocaine Anonymous is all other mind-altering substances. When I got here, I think the fourth meeting I went to was Nirvana. And in 93, at Nirvana, we had 50 chairs. On a regular Friday night, we could fill maybe 40 of them. On a really big birthday night, we would have 50. And on the super terrific couple that I went to, it was 60. And there were people sitting on the bookshelves over at the Church of the Ascension on Gilpin and 6th, I think it is, or 8th. In the spring, and I was dead set worried that I was screwed. I came in here without treatment. I came in here without detox. And I went, oh, my God, you know, a new drug is going to come along. And everybody's going to leave, and they're going to go start another A. And I want CA. That's where I love this fellowship. I don't want to go anywhere else. Now we have a new drug, and it's driving them in, not out. There's an irony in my life. On the spring of 94, we had a workshop. And that workshop was, how are we going to carry the message of CA? What is going to be our brief message? And there was five of us, I think, there. It was Hugh and Russ and me and Don. And I can't remember who the fifth one was. And out of Russ's mouth came this. You don't ever have to use again, even if you want to. And I looked over and said, that's the stupidest fucking thing I ever heard. 30 years later, and that is all over this fellowship, and it's his. And he's shared it with us, and everybody has adopted it. So that happens. There was one other. I think I'm going to leave that at that point. There was one other one, and I'll tell it and go. When I got here, it was pretty clear and rock solid. Do the work or die. Honest, open-minded, and willing. That was pounded into me. That's the first three steps. CA was not, we did not spend a lot of time on everybody's welcome. We didn't say that, you know, if somebody came in and they were alcoholic, and there were alcoholics in my first meeting, but it wasn't as big a deal as it is now. And we really hit the rooms with this. This belongs to us. It belongs to all of us. And we only get it when we share it. And we have it because the people in the rooms hug each other and they share their experience, strength, and hope. We support each other and we welcome everybody. Our diversity is our legacy and it's what keeps us going. We don't care how you used it. Come in and get sober with us. You know, share it with somebody else. And it's marvelous. This thing is thriving. And when I was a delegate and went to the world respects Colorado. And Carol Ann told you why. We were starting at the same time, California, and they listened to our message. And that's because Don Pritz gave it to Don Young, who gave it to us. We did big book studies. And when I look around, I've got margin notes that came from Don Pritz. in the book studies, and we all have them in our books. But I started looking around recently, and you know what? They're in everybody's books. So this has been carried on, and it's deep, it's the roots, and you people. Thank you.
So about 10 years ago at this time, I was sitting at an area meeting. My sponsor suggested that I get involved in H&I and in area, and I jumped on it right away. And I was sitting in that meeting, and right behind me was a guy named Skins and a guy named Rob. And they were talking about who had the code to the locker for the Unity Committee and what that code was. And I remember sitting there going, I want to know what that code is. I want to know everything that there is to know about this fellowship. And it started from that conversation that was happening right behind me. Later, I would read in the big book a story called Safe Haven. And at the back of that, at the very end of that story, he says, the process of knowing who I want to be has to start with knowing who I don't want to be. And there was those two words we learned in the big book, and I thought, what could I learn from our past that would help me in my own recovery? And I'll tell you, it was a tremendous amount, right? And so I dove right into this thing. And, you know, people would say, well, who wants to become a librarian, right? And I did. I mean, I really wanted to be a part of all that you see behind you. It's amazing the history and the experience that is in all of this archive that teaches us so much about where we're going through our past, just like the big book did to me personally. And so being a part of archive has been just a great experience for me. I sat on the World Archive Committee as well as here, and there are two over there that are instrumental in how all of this came about in here today. And so I'd like to thank them very much for everything that they have done, Jim and Todd. So now what I'd like to do is open it up for any questions that you have, and then we'll try to repeat the question, and then so that it gets onto the recording so that we know what was asked. So
I add one thing?
You bet.
Before we get, because it's important. I'm Carolyn. I'm still an addict. One of the things I wanted to add that has threaded through this whole thing is when we began this journey, we did not know that there was an organization named Cocaine Anonymous that also existed, and that organization was now World. So we spent the first 2 years or more than 2 years as a local organization, and all of this began to occur as we were not even part of and did not know that the other organization existed, but we were doing this in our own way in parallel with them. And somebody called and told me that there was a national organization, national, now worldwide, by the same name. And so we began weaving in new things, but we began to put a foundation together as a local organization, and I think that's important.
Questions.
While you're thinking about questions, I just want to mention that everybody on this panel is still doing service work. That's a big hint. And also to segue from what Carol Ann just said, several of us have had the opportunity to work at a world level. And that was a real privilege. I was nominated, I think I had 5 years, to be the the offering for a possible trusteeship. Thank God I didn't get it. I was not, the guy who got it really deserved it. And he's still doing service as well, so.
Roscoe Cain Attic.
There's a question.
Question.
Yeah. Early on, oh, sorry, Ryan Attic.
Hey, Ryan. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Early on, did you guys struggle with the spirit of rotation early on?
Did we struggle with the spirit of rotation?
Because it wasn't as big during that time.
We didn't have a lot of people to do the service work. I mean, the truth is, in our first, I don't know, 5-6 years, there's a class of 89, there was 93, 94, 95 came in, and then we had other classes after that. And before then, you know, you might be a JSR, and then after you got done with a JSR, you were made coffee. Or you were a greeter or something like that. And then once we went through the traditions and the concepts about the spirit of the rite of rotation, the only way this fellowship is going to grow is you let other people come in and make coffee. I mean, really. And, you know, I thought about this, how when Aaron died, 3 years ago, it'll be 3 years ago in December, that when old-timers die, especially in this fellowship, what happens is a part of the history goes away. And so what has to happen is you people that are sitting in this meeting, you have to make the history. And we, in the very beginning, we had a three-hour district meeting on a Tuesday night, and we had a three-hour area meeting on the last Thursday of the month. And what happened is we were so small, we just got burned out. And so you just have to let... So somebody asked me in the H&I meeting that we had at 12, that what was the hardest thing in your first year? And so the hardest thing for me in my first year was, you know, not doing crack and easy was easy to get separated from. But I had to drive to work differently. I couldn't go by the Argonaut every day. There were parts of Denver, Federal Boulevard between I-70 and I-76. I couldn't go by anymore. And this is the truth. I did not watch TV for my first 5 years because beer commercials just set me off. And so the not using and being abstinent is the very beginning. That would be treatment. Recovery happened when I got out.
Questions?
It's Derek, I'm an addict.
Hey, Derek.
I think it was Art mentioned that Don Young went to the World Service Conference in 85.
That was the my understanding. The question was Don Young went to the first World Conference in 85. That's my understanding.
Well, was Colorado officially an area and he was going as the delegate, or was he
what
just
year was
kind
it?
Of going?
Don Y came in 85.
Right.
Okay. So it would have been 86 or 87 when he went to that conference.
Wasn't that the first World Conference?
No.
Okay.
No, he and Tom went to New York. He was our delegate. We became, in 1988, we became an area.
Well, the piece that he gave me was that he was on that floor when the fight over.
Yeah.
All of mind-altering substances was had, and it was a brutal battle because we were starting this from the beginning.
Yes.
Was that it? Any others?
Question.
Quick question. Russ, you've mentioned a couple of times the first district. Can you tell us some of the circumstances around why you guys decided to create a district?
Sure. We've not gone through this 5 or 6 times, by the way, in 35 years. So what happened was is same people, the same GSRs went to district, went to area. And it's just almost, I mean, we would argue over postage and stuff that, you know, in the grand scheme of things didn't matter. So what happened is sometime in the 90s, we decided to have an area, have an area meeting. Well, then what happened is the fellowship grew to, you know, 25, 30 meetings a week. And so then we had a southern district and a northern district and a metro district. And then what happened over the years is that because of the pendulum, you know, people left and we went back to district. So one of the reasons that they started to go to different districts is for service positions, is to get more people involved. And the last iteration we went through, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, we had a lot more people, and then the pandemic, people left. And so now we don't have as many districts. But, you know, as long as you got a pot of coffee and a couple of alcoholics, you got no worries.
Can I add to that?
Sure.
When I got here, the three districts existed, like he said. Colorado Springs was their own, then it was the metro, and the northern was basically Boulder. And the next year's convention, afterwards, we had an argument. And that argument was over whether we were going to gamble. Have a fundraiser that was going to be gambling. And that started a nasty fight at the area. And Boulder disappeared pretty quick after that. And it was basically Denver and Colorado Springs.
And Michael in the back can also speak to this. But I'll just simply say the Northern District has come and it's gone and it's come and it's gone. It fades, it wanes, it ebbs, and it never remains. There's not enough people and there's not enough meetings. And somehow or other, it seems that nobody up north thinks they're an addict or alcoholic. We run into that all the time. So it disappears regularly. And then as there's more people, after the pandemic wanes and the ebb goes up, we might have a northern district again, but it'll disappear. And Michael, do you want to add to that?
You better come up.
Get a mic. Yeah, come up, come up.
Come up.
Mike? Come up.
Sorry to stand in front of everybody. Okay, the Northern District, when it was originally formed, was 5 to 6 meetings. We had a meeting in Loveland. We had a meeting in 88th and La Panne at the Charter. We had a meeting Sunday nights that was up at 100th and Stanley, those areas. So the neat part was about that, we drew in a lot of people that kept going out. But you know what? That's what I had to do. So that meeting, I lived in Littleton, Colorado, and I went to meetings in Boulder. I went to meetings, I went to treatment in Boulder. So basically that, you know, everybody thought I lived up that way. When they found out I lived in Littleton, they were shocked. But that's because we go to any lengths. Thank you.
We have quality problems these days. One of which is, it's kind of cyclic too. Should a delegate's term of service be 4 years or 2 years? I have heard this several times over the years and I just shut my ears anymore.
I think I was at the conference, and the brouhaha was you could not be a committee chair if you only sent 3 delegates and a guy got elected in his first year, which never happened. He would be a chair the next year, and they would wind up having to pay for it from the world, and they came to the groups and said to the areas, or yeah, the states, and they said, don't do that anymore. You know, you've got to be the delegate when you are the committee chair. So Colorado adopted that we would send a non-voting delegate who would pick his committee and go to it the first year and possibly be made a committee chair, and then he would actually be a delegate the next year. So it's this thing that's gone back and forth as to whether or not the states would do that. And sometimes they get kind of uppity and say, no, you've got to pay for it.
Just don't use.
I think our time's over here.
I just want to thank everybody for coming. It was awesome. Give them another round of applause if you will, please. So we only sit here because they came before us and they did what they did, and it's now up to us to keep this thing alive by sharing our experience from this point on. So thanks again for coming, and we'll see you at the rest of the convention. There you go.